Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 476, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Amit Mehta from TechVu. Amit, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you. So my understanding is you are in the Chicago area, correct?
Absolutely. Yep. We're in the west suburbs of Chicago.
Okay. And you have a storefront.
Yeah, I have a couple storefronts in the area.
Okay, very cool. So why don't we get started, and why don't you go ahead and tell your story of basically how you got started in computer repair and where it's taking you to today?
Sure, absolutely. So I got started, I guess officially I would say I got A-plus certified when I was 16, so in high school. Always loved computers. So from the first Packard Bell I got back, probably.
Oh,
you remember that?
Oh, Packard Bells. Oh, yes.
You know, they were sort of a tank, but it takes you back to the, you know, heavier is better sort of mentality.
Yes.
They're solid. I know they got a lot of flack, but they were solid. And so I got one back in freshman year of high school. I couldn't stop myself from taking it apart that first night, you know, after the parents went to sleep.
Okay.
Because, you know, they'd walk in and say, "What are you doing with the parts all over the place?" Go to sleep, took it apart, and just something about it just sort of clicked. And I said, "I love this." And so from there on, kept tinkering. And those were the days when, you know, you signed up for a trial for, geez, what was it, MSN or AOL and all of the original dial-ups.
CompuWare and
yes,
oh yeah,
I remember that exactly. This is before internet really was everywhere, right? So
right.
So fixing computers a lot of times meant you took your set of floppy disks with you wherever you went, and they didn't even have CD-ROM drives because you had, you know, the atappy.sys and all those files to make your CD-ROM work.
Yep.
If you remember that.
Oh yeah.
So I started there I did computer engineering in school. My background in college at University of Illinois down in Champaign was computer engineering. Got recruited to go out to Silicon Valley. So, you know, I loved tech all the way through, worked in semiconductors after college. And after a few years in the semiconductor realm and doing a few things in California, I ended up back in Illinois just because of family and that's where I grew up. So I knew at some point I'd be back here. And once I got back, about a year or so after I got back, the side work of computer repair had gotten busy enough and big enough that it made sense to get a retail presence. So set up a shop in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, great community, and that did well. And so, you know, sort of one thing after another. And within 18 months, I had a second store in Elmhurst, Illinois.
Wow.
I wanted to see if I could replicate the success, you know, so a lot of factors, as you know, go into any business, certainly when you have success. So I needed to see, was that success just the location, just me, just the tech that was there, you know, who knows what. And so the easiest way to me to test that was to replicate and see if it worked in another spot. And it did. And so, you know, we're fortunate and luckily. It was profitable from the beginning, and we had a lot of great customers, great community, as I said, and so never sort of looked back. But in terms of expansion and next steps, what I decided about 2 years ago, I'd say now 2.5 years ago, is this idea of replicating. You know, it's a little bit limiting when you have 3, 4, 5, 15 shops. Even maybe I could handle one day, but I certainly could not handle 2,000 shops. Let's say. But the market is there for what we do, how we do it. There's probably 1,500 to maybe 2,000 pockets in the U.S. that I can identify from census data that would work for us. And so franchising just made sense. It said, you know, you look at what can we offer, how can we offer it, and is the need there? And it is. So, you know, I'll get into a little bit more detail if you'd like, but that's sort of how I got here.
Okay, no, that's awesome backstory. Now, so those two shops that you originally started, how far apart are they?
They're 7 miles, I believe, a little under 7 miles.
Really? Okay, they're that close together. Now, how does that impact the different customers that you get in those shops?
So that's a interesting question that we struggled with in the beginning, because you know you don't want to cannibalize your own business,
right?
And that absolutely in the beginning that was one of the concerns. Like, look, you know, what's the right distance? 5 miles, 15 miles? I don't know, and I really didn't know. So part of it was just figuring it out and seeing. But when we map out our customer data, and you know, at this point we have thousands of customers, but at that time we didn't, and so we have hundreds, and we map it out, and within a mile and a half of a location really is the saturation point. So we became sort of the big boy in town, but just within that mile or 2 mile radius. So if you go even 5 miles away, computer repair is the sort of thing that, yeah, absolutely, you always get some people that'll drive 2 hours for you, but that's not generally the case. Is if you're the type of person that is looking at Google for a computer repair place because you don't have your, you know, brother-in-law or whoever you normally go to, then you're not going to drive 20 minutes. If there's something closer that's decent reviews, you're probably going to stay local. So it ended up, it's fine. You know, we have some customers that, you know, literally like live in one town and still drive to the other town where their shop is just because that's where they started and they like it. But usually that's not the case. So we're not cannibalizing our own business. We, in fact, are buying the territory. And that's why going back to about 1,500 to 2,000 locations nationwide, those are the pockets. And we have generally a pretty affluent client base because they're not the type that generally walk in and say, you know, how much. They're the ones that walk in and say, do you know what you're doing and how long is it going to be? And
right.
So it's a good demographic to serve because as long as we're doing what we do well, they're willing to pay. And, you know, we're not gouging anyone. We actually charge pretty fair prices, but we do run up, you know, I would say a little bit cheaper than Geek Squad, not a lot. And sometimes almost the same, but the value proposition is much different, whether it's, you know, just higher expertise or faster service, or a combination of those, or things that Geek Squad doesn't do, like certain MSP stuff or even web development. Like we have .NET guys and PHP as well. So a lot of that stuff gives like a whole package to the client, which other places don't necessarily do.
So you've just proved what I've been talking about on this show for the last, I don't know how many years, a couple of years now. And because a lot of people will get freaked out about competition. And I have always been one of these guys that sits back and goes, and I run my business part-time. Everybody knows that, but I will stay within a local area. And when I say local area, it's a 6x6 square mile radius. That is my local territory. I don't really want to go outside of that because I don't feel like driving farther than that. And for the customers that do come to me, it's the same thing. They're not going to drive a long distance to get to me. It's got to be something that's feasible on the way home from work, on the way to work, whatever it might be. That's what they do. So I'm glad to hear you say that. And I was just thinking back, you had two stores within 7 miles of each other. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Ray Kroc said, hey, McDonald's on every corner, and they're doing pretty well. So it must work.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, you hit the nail on the head with the practicality of it. You know, people want to do it on their way to work or right before they pick their kids up from school or whatever, you know, whatever it may be. But when I hear a lot of other computer technicians or business owners say, well, you know, my customers, they come from 3 hours away because I'm the only person that can do it for them. It's like, yeah, okay, you have a few of those.
Sure.
You cannot operate a business like that. I mean, you cannot say, you know, I'm going to create the mega super center, because there are businesses like that where like you just get a bigger and bigger and bigger depot and you could literally have like a computer repair store the size of a town and you know, the entire Midwest region will come to you. But that's not computer repair. There's other businesses maybe where that works. But in computer repair, because it's a convenience slash maybe sort of like almost like a dentist, you know, you like your dentist, you want to go to your dentist because you trust them over time, or your car mechanic, but you're not going to drive 2 hours to go see your dentist. You'll find a new one if that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, perfect point. One of the reasons that I pick a dentist or a doctor's office, and this is no kidding, is I pick the one that is closest to me. And when I say close, I want these people to be less than 2 miles.
Yep.
Because if I need to get to an appointment or whatever, I need it to be, I can hop in a car, get over there, get done, and get back and continue on with my day.
So if
I'm like that, there's got to be a lot of other people out there that are like that.
Oh, yeah. That's how humans are. And it makes sense. You want to get things done. And computer repair is not the sort of thing that's like an elective that that you want to do. You go seek out computer repair because it's a problem that you didn't want to deal with in the first place. And now that you have it, you just want it to be solved. You're not getting any joy out of the fact that you're getting your computer repaired.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was talking to somebody earlier and they were telling me that I was talking about a laptop. Their wireless was going out on their laptop and they were like, okay. I said, well, how old's the computer? I said, I think it's about 5 years old. I said, okay, that's about 100 in human years.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? And I'm like, oh yeah. And then come to find out it was like 6 years old. I'm like, oh, that's not even alive. It's just dead. just yeah. Give it up at that point. I'm like, we can fix the wireless and I'm going to attempt to do it tomorrow, but mm-hmm. we can put a little USB dongle in there and see if that fixes a problem. If it's just a Wi-Fi card, that's fine. But in my opinion, what happens a lot of times is when hardware starts to fail, especially in laptops, mm-hmm. everything else starts to follow after that. So is it worth your time and effort, or do you just go plop down another $500 to $800 and get a decent laptop? And I know a lot of people go $500 to $800. Wait, you can get a laptop for $300. Yes, but you shouldn't.
Yeah. You know, that hits on a great point. So we have this conversation a lot with customers and I'll say, okay, what's a good laptop or what should I buy? And the answer they're looking for is Dell or Lenovo or HP. And we love this question now because, you know, after the years we've made it very clear that we step back and say, listen, I know you want an answer like HP, that's the one to buy.
Right.
But the fact is you're asking the wrong question. We're not asking what you shouldn't be asking Toyota or Nissan. You should be asking sedan or pickup truck. And that's where we get to business class versus consumer grade laptops. Mm. So are there great HP, Dell and Lenovo laptops? Yes. Yes. But what you really are should be looking at and what we end up steering residential and commercial clients toward is the Latitude, the ThinkPads, the right. EliteBooks, not the Inspiron, IdeaPad, and you know all of the consumer grade stuff. And so when they ask this question, and for us, it's always fun to educate that they start seeing that you know there is the $250 Best Buy special or the $300 special, but I'm running my business on it. And why have I ended up coming to you three times for everything from overheated graphics card to burned out power supply on my desktop?
Right.
We show them the quality and we show them like the stuff that we have lined up in the store that we sell. And, you know, we'll buy not huge bulk, we'll buy 15, 20 ThinkCenters at a time. And we move them pretty quick because that's what we sell. And people don't come back because we're supporting them long-term, just like every computer repair owner. You know, they want to support their clients long-term, but it reflects poorly on you when you sell equipment that just fails quickly. And saving the $200 today is you given the option for almost any client, especially if they're running a business, they don't want to save the $200. They want to spend the $200 and just not have to see you or talk to you or call you
exactly.
with problems, you know? And so we've become very good at moving a lot of, you know, in our case, we like Lenovo. We do a lot of ThinkCenter and ThinkPad, but as you know, it could be Latitude, it could be Optiplex, whatever it is, but business grade is the way to go.
Exactly. And the other thing too, is the fit and finish. What I explain to a lot of people is when it comes to a laptop, you get a $300 laptop and although the components inside might be identical, and a lot of times they are, what ends up happening is you have these very plastic cases. You have hinges that are so stinking hard that they end up breaking the cover at some point from opening and closing the thing. Or if they knock it off their desk and it hits a hard surface, a lot of times it explodes into a million pieces. And then what do you do with it? Because a lot of times those parts are, if you're replacing an upper cover or a lower, you're talking about $100 just for the parts, if you can find them for that particular model.
Exactly.
So it's like pay a little bit more. Yes, you're still going to get a little bit of plastic, but you're going to get some metal in there and you're going to get a much more robust computer. One of my complaints sometimes is although business class is easy to pull apart, as easy as consumer, there's a lot more screws generally.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Which is good.
You know, I think one thing to mention, you know, with our audience, with the computer repair business owners, so this is what I've done for a few years and it works, is I'll take my laptop, the one that they know I'm using. This is my daily workhorse. And I use a W series ThinkPad. You know, they're built pretty well. And make sure you have an SSD before you do this. But I'll take it, and I'll take it maybe, you know, 6 to 8 inches above the surface, like counter or glass, whatever it is. I'll drop it, and I'll drop it a few times. And people will, like, have their jaw down, like, why'd you do that? And it's a running laptop. I'll show it while it's running. I'll just drop it a few more times.
Right.
And then I look at him and say, look, I have a feeling that if I did that with your Bell Inspiron or your consumer grade laptop there, it may not have survived.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, absolutely not. I mean, no, I wouldn't do that on my laptop. And I say, I do that to mine. I've done this hundreds of times, and yet here I am. I'm still using it as my daily workhorse. And I think things like that will go a long distance. Or pick up two power supplies. As you know, a good quality power supply is significantly heavier than the cheap power supply, right? So those are things that are tangible. So when we're trying to bridge this gap between non-technical clients and a highly technical technician, it's never the jargon and the techno babble that's going to impress them or help them. It's things like that. Give them something heavy, show them what they have versus what you use. Or take your laptop, throw it down there, and show that, hey, it's still ticking. And then it starts to paint that picture for them of, oh, you know, I get it. Like, yes, I want that. I don't want to deal with this. And it goes a long way in sales, actually, that directly affects our revenue.
That's nice. It's the same thing that goes along with, I only put in when I'm talking about hard drives, I'm talking about spinning hard drives. But I will only put in one grade of hard drive, and it's not the lowest. I'm not getting Western Digital Blue or Green. It's going to be a Western Digital Black and or a Hitachi 2.5-inch drive for laptops, and they're basically the same specs, and now both really the same company. But the reason I do that is because the failure rate on those is a lot less than the cheaper drive. So, yes, the customer is going to pay more because I'm not paying for it. They're going to pay for it. But it's going to last them as long as that device needs to last them. And so they're not going to have to come back and go, hey, my hard drive failed.
Yes, exactly.
I don't want that.
The fact that you sold it to them might as well mean that you built it.
Right, exactly. Really.
And then we lose sight of that sometimes because we know that, hey, if you wanted to save $50 on your drive, well, you're going to deal with it. But that's not how the customer sees it. The customer sees it as whether you warned them or not. Hey, you sold me this drive and it failed in three months.
Exactly.
And you're sitting there thinking, well, yeah, I told you this, but that's just not how it works. They're going to say, you sold it to me. You sold me a garbage product. And here I am.
And that's why I don't even talk about things like hard drives. I go, you have a bad hard drive. Here's the price. Here's and it's reinstallation, all that stuff, updates and all that, swapping out the drives. Everything's included. I just shoot them a price. Here's the price. It's not negotiable. And so a lot of them, you know, they either accept it or they don't. And then maybe they go somewhere else and get a Western Digital Blue or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's okay. Right. I mean, you, at least you're sort of setting your standard and you stick with it because at the end of the day, you're going to be answering for that standard, whether it's a happy customer or an angry customer, you're going to answer for it.
Exactly. Wow. So now how many employees do you have in your shops right now?
Four. So between the two shops. So between the two shops, I have four employees, and it would take, generally speaking, about two full-time people to run a shop because we do a lot of this analysis as we position the franchise offering. And in Illinois, as with several other states, there's a lot of regulation about franchise offerings and being registered with the Attorney General and all that. So we hash through those numbers and we have to make sure that they're realistic, they make sense, and. After all of that, we look at what it takes to run a shop like this and to do decent revenue. And it takes two, and I would say as you get a little bit busier, about 2.5 people per shop.
Okay. That's a good idea and a good number to kind of throw out there because a lot of people will, you know, a lot of us try to do this on our own to a certain extent, but I think there is a point where you actually have to call in some help, whether it's, you know, coworkers or whatever, franchisees or employees or whatever it might be, to make it work for you.
Yeah. And so here's the interesting thing on that topic. So originally, like early on, when I had my first shop, before I decided to do number two, I made it a point to go and meet all the local computer repair shop owners. And there's, oh, I don't know, maybe half a dozen shops I got to know, like the owners.
Oh, you're saturated. There's no work for you.
Well, you know, there's this perception. So there is a perception where people feel like, oh, well, you know, the competition, we can't have them, or this is bad for us. And I mean, the reality is, as you know, there's so much work out there that one more or one less shop really makes no difference. And that's a great thing, you know. So ignorance is sort of bliss here too, because I didn't realize that there were four brick and mortar shops within a 2-mile radius of where I set up in the beginning.
Right.
And so, you know, it's fine. It worked out. We're good. And I think a couple of them since then have closed, but it doesn't matter. You know, the work is there. It's okay. You know, we survived through it. No issue there.
Well, that's good. Wow. So, all right. So a couple employees per shop, and obviously you're getting a lot of foot traffic in there. And do you deal with, and we'll go into kind of your business offerings in a little bit, but do you deal with, as far as a lot of break fix, I would imagine, and as far as hardware, software, I mean, you kind of do it all?
Yeah. Interesting sort of tidbit here. I started the company with web development. So,
wow.
Computer repair is just sort of always there just because computers always breaking. But it was primarily web development. And my backup plan was, I said, if this first shop doesn't work, and the rent was not crazy high, it was okay. I said, you know, then I just won't offer computer repair and I'll use it as an office for web development. Luckily, and sort of the reason we're talking here is because computer repair really took off and we never really dropped web development. In fact, we're a Apple Enterprise developer. So for iOS, you know, we do enterprise development and we can do a lot of other .NET applications we've done for large and small companies. But the bulk of our revenue now and what we do is computer repair, not the web development anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. So we offer a wide range, and sort of back to your question here, we have a mix of residential and commercial. The break fix walk in traffic is very Geek Squad like. So virus removal, tune up, SSD upgrades, a lot of that. But that's maybe half the revenue.
Okay.
I think the other half the revenue on the repair side is more business deployment. So we'll do access points, so like mesh networks, we'll do firewalls, network gear. So we'll find old fast Ethernet switches and switch them up with gigabit, simple things like that. But also office transitions, like people are moving from one office to the other. So our guys will go and do the drops. So we'll do all the Ethernet wiring, patch panels. We like those. So all of the hardware stuff is a lot of fun. But having the physical presence of the stores, you know, it has done a couple things. One is it brings a lot of parts margin just from the fact that we stock the parts. So we're not ordering a 24-port switch or business class access point when we need it. We stock these things. So it's instantly available. And so there's a power in being able to tell a client, oh, yeah, we'll bring that with us or we have that like today.
Right.
Let's get it done versus, hey, I'll have it in 3 days or 2 day Amazon shipping or whatever it is.
Right.
And you end up either losing a deal or they just see it as, oh, well, I mean, can't you just get it from Fry's? Or, you know, you can tell they're thinking like, why am I waiting 3 days? Like, isn't this what you do?
Right.
And I love that we finally got to a point where we stock enough stuff, whether it's a server, a computer, or, you know, laptops, whatever it is, we stock new and used tons of equipment because we move it. And the bulk of what we buy, we're able to turn, I don't remember the exact ratio, but within 3 months, I would say we've probably turned over 80% of what we've bought. So it's not like we're holding it forever.
Right.
But having that is huge because just there's so many times where if we didn't have something in stock, then the client, you know, like they wanted something today, whether it's a laptop or whatever, or a printer, they go somewhere else and they get it. Whereas if we had it, they would have bought it. And so now we have more and more stuff. So there's less and less reason for someone to go somewhere else like Best Buy or Staples to grab something because we have it here today. Why not grab it? And they're willing to pay more. Like it's not even that it's a price thing. They rarely argue the price because we're charging fair prices, but are they as cheap as Amazon or Newegg? No, but they don't even want that. They don't care. They would rather we stand behind it. It's our problem if something doesn't work, and they'd pay more because it's one experience all in one shot.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that because I work out of my home and it probably once a month I get a call from some other tech shop somewhere that actually has a storefront. Hey, you don't happen to have any NIC cards around, do you? I'm like going, I got a tech in the area that needs a NIC card. And I'm like going, no, you know, because the handful of ones that I keep are just for if I need to take them out on the job or whatever.
Sure. Yep. Well, exactly. And when you're, and I think when you're mobile, I think speaking to that, you know, I can very much appreciate the non-retail mobile computer repair concept because I did it. In fact, when I lived in California, I did that for about a year and a half or so. I did like, you know, the mailers and I got calls and I did that. But I always felt that if I could carry a little inventory with me, it would really help step it up. And, sure. and I think it does. When you have the stuff available, it makes a difference sometimes.
Absolutely. No, that makes a lot of sense because you're right. In this instant microwave society, people just don't want to wait for anything. They yeah. want it done right now. And I always say this to most people, they think that they have an emergency. The reality is they don't, but they think they have an emergency. So yep. if you want their business, sometimes you've got to be able to go, hey, I've got this and let's get it done right now. And not only that, I'm of the mindset sometimes too, that once you get a job, if you can get in there and get it done, it's already off your plate and you're on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
So yep. there's some goodness in that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. When you can turn something same day or you know, within one call, there's no substitute from a business standpoint to closing the deal, collecting the check or invoicing it and being done with it and moving on to the next job.
Right. So now we talked about you do hardware and obviously you're doing some business offerings. You've got firewalls and so on and so forth. Now, as far as my favorite word, your MSP clientele.
Yep.
What types of things are you generally doing for them for your business? I know we talked about the firewalls and stuff like that, but any type of managed service on their workstations, different things like that?
Yeah. What we're generally offering, and this is from a business standpoint, what we're explaining to them is we'll make sure that your computer's updated. So whether that's security patches, Windows updates, maybe some applications that they use, those items are updated. So, they're secure, so to speak, but we always explain that, you know, there's always a possibility of a virus or other attack. There's no guarantee against that,
sure.
but we're doing best practices. And so for our customers, what we've done over the years is we have different tiers. We have three tiers, which is basically a basic care sort of a package, and then a middle, which is a remote care. And that covers anything we can do over the phone or remotely in labor-wise is covered. And then there's a third tier, which it covers on-site. So not only all the stuff that we can do remotely, but when we have to come to you, even that's covered. And so they pay a certain amount of money per computer per month. And then it's a fixed IT cost for them other than new setups. Like if they wanted to add like a second office or something, that wouldn't be covered, but pretty much everything else is covered. And that was an interesting thing. You know, there's a transition that I think you'll see when you look at the computer repair sort of the landscape. There are so many computer repair shops, retail shops that grow and grow. And then their sort of natural next step is to say, oh, I'm not going to service retail anymore. It's a headache. And I've heard that literally dozens right. of times from different owners. And they say, why would I do this? Why would I deal with the overhead, which is honestly not even that much in a retail store, but why would I deal with the overhead? And why would I deal with you know, little Timmy's, you know, chocolate milk spilled in his laptop when I could just do MSP work. I could have business clients. I could do it from my office, not worry about it. And I feel like that's leaving money on the table. Why can't you do both? And isn't it just a business process that would help you deal with, or pricing issue that would help you deal with little Timmy's chocolate milk? Like, who cares? I mean, if it's a paying customer that you can service well, and not even necessarily through fixing it, you know, there's an assumption that when things come in, a computer technician needs to be like a skilled surgeon and do like black magic to fix a computer when there is a simple answer. The simple answer is, look, there's chocolate milk in the computer. It's not worth repairing, but here's a brand new ThinkPad I could sell for $450.
Right.
And Timmy's mom says, let's do it. So I don't think that there's a necessity to drop the non-MSP stuff. But the MSP stuff absolutely is great in terms of recurring revenue and just providing us. Actually, it's a source of business. You know, it's not a huge moneymaker, I would say, anyway, to be servicing these computers on a monthly basis through the contracts. But what is great is when they need anything, whether it's new switches, computers that change out every 3 to 5 years, whatever it is, we're their IT place. So when they need anything, they're coming to us and we're servicing them well. So It's a way of keeping your monthly revenue solid, but it's also a great source of new business from the clients that you already have, which is always easier than getting business from new clients.
Yeah, I think a lot of business owners out there, they're like you said, they get irritated by maybe the residential work, but if they do leave that revenue on the table, I say, hey, that's fine because there's plenty of people out there that can take that take that up and take that type of business. And I think it's just two different ways of doing business. And I think either one is fine. A lot of times, and I've wrestled with this myself, like even from a residential standpoint, I can offer a managed service for my residential customer or even for my business customer. But the reality is, if you ever crunch the numbers, if I paid them for whatever you want to call it, break fix, I would actually make more money that way than the MSP offering any day.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, they don't look at their margin, right? And people get worried about things like I hear the word overhead all the time. And to me, it's mind-boggling. Like if you look at the numbers, end of any given month, you look at where were your dollars spent. And it, you know, for us, and I'm guessing for a lot of others, rent and you know, whatever auxiliary is like electric bill and all that,
sure,
is such a small part of our expenses. It's not the lion's share. It's not like, oh my God, having a retail store like that made or broke, you know, the month.
Right.
It's not, because there's so much business you get just from having a retail store, even from your current MSP clients or, you know, whatever commercial book of business you have, you will get other auxiliary sales because they have kids that buy laptops and they have brother-in-laws that buy laptops and all these things. They'll come to you, especially when they need things like data recovery and Outlook setup and all that, it's all going to end up on your plate. So it brings so much more business than you would save by not having it, is my opinion, at least in my experience.
Right, exactly. Well, and there's been technicians out there that, if they're mobile techs, what they'll do a lot of times is, instead of having a managed service, now I'm all about protecting the customer too, so that's why I do offer it to certain customers, because it does keep them not only safer, but keeps them running pretty much throughout the year, except for little hiccups. Mm-hmm. But they'll run their stuff, and you know, they get charged a monthly fee. But then I could turn around, and I know people that will charge basically quarterly cleanups. So that means four times a year, yep, I'm getting paid a lot more than what I would have charged them on a monthly basis. So therefore, for those customers, and those customers, they repeat every year. And it's almost like a residual income, because it's already pre-set up. When you leave that appointment, you're setting up another appointment, and it just keeps on going.
Absolutely,
and so
yes.
I'm just, I look at people and go, when they go, oh, there's no money in break fix, I go, are you insane?
Yeah, maybe they're charging incorrectly. You know, that happens all the time too. You look at the offerings. I've looked at a couple of our competitors. You know, like I'll talk to them and we'll be talking about pricing. And they're doing virus removals for $49.
Right.
And that's why this is not working for you. And they're not doing it properly, because, and how can you expect them to? How can you expect them to spend the time and energy and effort it takes to really thoroughly do all the work they're supposed to do if they're not making margin on it? I mean, their cost, I mean, really, they assume their cost is zero because they're doing it.
Right.
And that's not the truth, right? I mean, they're spending their time. So their cost of a virus removal is probably $30,
right,
if not, you know, 40. So when they charge 49 and think, well, I made 49 on that, no way. Like, you just, you know, how are you going to eat? Like, how are you going to feed yourself? And is that not ultimately a disservice to the customer when you really could not have done a great job for $49? You did what you could, and that's, you know, fair. I mean, you got paid probably a decent price for what you did, but the customer never said, hey, I want to skimp and I would rather save a dollar. In a lot of cases, the customer would have paid $100 or $150 given the option if you could spend more time and do it correctly.
Now, and I think the only caveat to that, because I've seen other business owners do this, which I think is fine, if you use that virus removal for a loss leader for your shop, if you have a regular retail shop,
sure,
I think you can do that to where you draw the customers in, and then you're basically upgrading them to different things, and they become your lifelong customers. I get that. What I see is a lot, sure, of mobile techs, you know, and I had to look at it from my standpoint, because I was one of those guys that was doing $49 virus removals.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I was also one of those guys that was doing it very well, so it would take me a long time. And so I'm looking, yep, at it, and I go, okay, I finally got to the point where I go, I either need to raise my prices to make it worth my while to actually do it, even with the low overhead out of my home that I have, because it just was not worth it for me to sit there and do it. And yep, the reason was, I remember having a customer call and say, hey, I needed a Windows operating system reloaded. Oh, okay. I said, you know, and I shot him price $125 or whatever it was. And yep, he was like, oh, well, Yeah, I was thinking more like $25. You just got to put a disc in. I was very nice about it, but I said, to be honest with you, I said, I would rather go and play video games for $25 than to do that job.
Because by the time you do the drivers and all the other things actually have it done and make sure when it's activated and all these things, it's not a $25 deal.
No.
And you're exactly right.
So that's the hard part. So I think there's many different business models that people can use, but you can't, I think if you're doing $49 virus removals and the rest of your business prices are that low also, that's going to be kind of hard, even if you're in a low median income market.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're right. Every market is different. So, I say the number 49, but I should not have picked a number like that, because the point is, there are places where maybe 29 is a fair price and other places where 200, like if you're in downtown Manhattan, a virus symbol is probably $200 or more because that's the market, right? And in most other places in the country, you'd be out of business if you try to get $200 for virus removal.
Right.
So the number, maybe not so much, but when we look relatively in terms of where's the market, what could they pay and how could you do it? You have to make sure that there's margin there for you. And that's where you see a lot of, I think, a lot of people in our industry and technology specifically that treat it more as a labor of love in terms of they love the technology, as do I, but they think of it as a business second. So because it's easy for them, for example, they charge less. And there's so many cases where you solved a problem, and just because you had one easy one doesn't mean you're not going to have the same thing later on a flat rate. It's 10 times harder. So why drop the $99 standard rate to $50? And that happens all the time. And that's where they're losing margin. And on the times where the same virus removal, instead of 99, it's still 99, but it takes them 8 hours of work to do properly, they just get run over on those. And so treating it like a business and doing it properly and sort of keeping a methodical way of doing what you do in your business is so important, and not sort of looking at it as a case-by-case basis of, oh, this was easy, or, oh, this was quick, or, what's the big deal? And that's where we think sometimes like technicians first and business people second, and that can be really harmful to the business.
And there's one way that you can curb that, and here's what I do. All I think about is when I'm sitting down with a customer is I'm the smartest guy in the room at that point.
Only at that point, come on.
Well, I'm the expert, right? So they're coming to me because of my education, whether it was self-education, whether it was school, whatever it was, I learned how to take care of these problems. And so that's what you're paying me for. It's like, you think about things like, research and development is a big part of a cost of car or whatever. It could be a widget. Doesn't really matter. But the point is, you're paying for whatever you pay for that, whether it's a vehicle or a widget, you're paying part of that is the R&D that went into that. Or everything would be like really dirt cheap.
Okay. You'd be paying for the bill of materials basically at that point.
Exactly.
Not the product. Yeah.
And so somebody has to basically spend that money, right? Or somebody has to get paid back for the money that they spent on producing whatever they produce. And a lot of us just forget that, I think.
Yeah, there is a value in the education that you bring to the table. And so it's not a bad thing that you could figure something out in 10 minutes. And the value of you doing that task didn't go from $100 to $20. In fact, the fact that they did it in 10 minutes where some other guy would have taken 2 hours probably means you should charge more, not less.
Exactly. And a lot of times when I do get those easy ones, man, in the privacy of my own office, I end up doing a jig. So,
So this is why the podcast should include video.
That's our other show. We could talk about that after this, but, I tell you what. Yeah. I look at it as a win. I was able to, because I've seen the problem before, because I've dealt with it before, I was able to fix it that much quicker. And then I can move on with my day and I still charge my hourly rate, whatever it is, and go from there.
Exactly.
So sounds like, you do a lot of different things in your business. And now you said you still do web development, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's not the majority portion of your business anymore.
No, now it's an auxiliary portion. Exactly. And the people that do the web development, the developers themselves and graphic people, they're all, those are all contracted. So I have full-time regular, you know, W2 employees that do the main computer repair business, but the web development stuff is all, it's all contracted. So, and that's a variety. Some guys are local, like in Illinois. Some guys are, you know, we've been, in the past used Russia and India and other places, but it depends on the project and the scope and the size, but that's all contracted. That's not our core employees. Like, I just want to make the distinction that, you know, we're not trying to make someone that's great at computer repair and A+ and all of that into someone that also does .NET and PHP, because they're just different skill sets.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You got to have the right tool for the job. And sometimes that tool is the person, not in a bad way, but in a good way.
Yeah, no, in a great, we utilize each other, you know, the best way we can. And there's things that, you know, I'll admit, I do not know which video card's the best and greatest and all this stuff. But we have someone on staff that you could ask him anything you want about video cards, and he's on it. And there's someone else on staff that's, you know, fixed everything from literally slot machines and TVs to like turkey basters, and he just knows how to fix stuff.
Nice.
And that's great. So yeah, we all have our things, you know, so we leverage each other where we're able to.
So let's talk a little bit about maybe the software and stuff that you use either for invoicing, all that kind of stuff, doing your taxes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So right now, so after what, maybe 7 years now of our systems, what we've had is QuickBooks Point of Sale Multi-Store, and that's our POS, and then QuickBooks Pro on the background, which is pretty common. And then we have our custom .NET system for all of our ticket flow. So invoicing, you know, you'd say lightweight CRM, our whole platform for how we print out our work orders and schedule our appointments and all that stuff. That's been a custom .NET system that we've made.
Okay.
So after this many years, though, so what we're doing is as of the next several weeks, actually, we're making the transition year end here. We're switching over to off the shelf systems to do what we do that are more integrated. And so after 7 years of Log Me and Rescue, for example, we've switched to our own on premise Screen Connect, which has been a, you know, interesting move. We did a big evaluation earlier this year of Max GFI versus LabTech versus all these other ones, and we ended up keeping the RMM solution that we had. And so it's important to constantly look at the tool set and the things that are available to do what we do better, because at the end of the day, that's how we will serve the customer better. That is how we'll improve margin and take more dollars home. That is how we will just be a highly scalable business. And, you know, and that's really why we're in the franchise boat, you know. So we were lucky and fortunate this year. We won it's something called Next Gen in Franchising. So we've been identified as having a lot of the qualities that hopefully will help us get to the next level in terms of franchising quickly and expanding that way. So we've made sure that all of the decisions that we make in how the business is run as a group, and I keep saying we because it really does take not just me, but myself and the employees working together to do this well.
Right.
We made a lot of good decisions to make it so that the franchisees that we bring on board will be positioned for success. And so, you know, we start looking at who these ideal franchisees are. As with any business, when you grow, you look at your audience. And my audience now is shifted from our clients that we do computer work for to now business-minded people, current computer repair store owners even, and we look at them to see who are the ones that are a good fit for us and vice versa, who are we a good fit for getting to the next level. Because you look at a lot of these shops that, you know, whatever their revenue is, it's not about the number, but they're underutilizing themselves. Like they have so much potential and, you know, maybe they're only making 50 or 100,000 or whatever it is. And you know they could do 10x that. But they simply don't have an infrastructure, you know, for you to walk into a place that does, let's say, 100,000 revenue, and you look at it and you look at the market and the area and what they do, and you say, yeah, they, you know, they could do 3x that easily.
Right.
They don't always have the infrastructure for that. So if I had literally three times the number of customers come in, some of them would implode because they simply don't have the staff or they don't have the systems or whatever. Like, they would love to have the business, but if I overnight turned on a spout and gave them three times the customers, it would not be good for anyone. And you know, that's something that I think we've come up with a system now where we figured it out for ourselves. And we've even tweaked it. So now we can sort of apply that to others. And it's called a conversion. So converting a current shop into our system is not necessarily, you know, always the best idea. But sometimes it is. Sometimes it's a great idea. And we just look at it from step one. So someone that's considering any franchise, say they're considering like Great Clips for Hair, Subway, all these different things. And hey, by the way, there's this, you know, tech food, computer repair concept. They might look at that initially and say, well, I don't know anything about computers, so no. And overcoming that has been a little bit of a challenge, because when you have some of this that's already a tech or already, you know, technology minded, sometimes the problem is they're not business minded. They've right. only made a business. So they've made a business out of doing computer repair, but they're not actually running a company. They're running a single business, which is okay, but there's a lot of potential there that maybe they're not harnessing. So we look at some of these candidates that are looking at things like, you know, Subways and all of that, and we show them, hey, you don't have to be a computer repair person to own a computer repair shop. We're showing them that if you hire the right technicians and if the right support system is there, which is in this case, that's what we're doing and what we're supplying to them. If you have that, and if we can sort of help you and your technicians get to the next level, you can do what you're supposed to do, which is run a business. So you go find clients and you go make sure that your employees are happy. You're training them properly. You're doing all of the things that are necessary in any business for it to run well. So I don't really care if it was a Great Clips for Hair or a Subway. There are certain things that, as a business owner, and you know this, Jeff, you run your own business, you know there's certain things that you have to do to run a business, whether it's, you know, filing tax paperwork, whether it's counting dollars, whatever it is, you have to do it. And so you take people that have business sense and show them that there's this huge delta. You know, I use this example and I love it because I feel like it's right spot on. You know, if I ask you right now where you could take your car to get repaired, let's say you don't want to go to a dealership. Like, do you know any place that repairs cars?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right.
Pep Boys, AutoZone, Midas, Meineke, like you name it. So now I then turn and I say, okay, well, let's say your computer's out of warranty. Where are you going to take it? And everyone knows Geek Squad. That's okay. Got it. Number one, Geek Squad. But there are reasons that some people don't want to go to Geek Squad, whether it's time, price, whatever it is, right? Quality of service. So fine. Where else? And you get silence, right?
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Say, well,
it's like,
well, there's this guy on Main Street, and you know they'll know a place, like a place, or they'll know a person. They say, oh, I always go to my brother-in-law. Okay, great. So where's this middle market for the masses? Because, you know, computers and phones and tablets are not going away. So where is this middle market? Why isn't there like Acme company, right? Oh, Acme. Yeah, if you don't want to go to Geek Squad and you don't want to go to the guy you know, there's Acme. It's a place I've heard of. I can take my computer. And why doesn't Acme exist? You know, it's such a simple, fundamental marketing problem. When you think business, you think supply, demand, you don't need just simple stuff before dollars get involved. And you think, okay, where's that middle market? How come there's no provider that's Acme company in the middle? And there's reasons for that. You know, as I've gotten to know a lot of computer repair store owners and I've done my research, and that's the whole reason I've sort of devoted my life to this now, there's a reasons for that. But I think the vast majority of those reasons can be alleviated. And most of it stems from the fact that the people that are qualified to do that are happy running their one shop or their mobile business and being all MSP and doing their own thing. And that's fine. But the business people that are out there that see the opportunity and say, well, I want to own 10 locations or I want 5,000 customers, not 50. They're left out because they don't have the technology expertise that like your listeners have, for example.
Okay.
And so coupling those, so look at it this way. What if you took a really good business person and then you took one of your listeners that's really good at what they do with computers and the two of them work together to fill that middle market gap, you know, and you let the tech guy do the tech stuff and the business person do the business stuff. And while they both maybe have overlap, so it's not that that computer technicians like ourselves couldn't run a business, because we do, but when you couple people and partner them up like that together that have the business sense and the technical sense, sky's the limit. And that's what the whole point of this franchising in my shops is we're going to open up that middle market. There's no reason why people across the US can't say, oh, Tech Foo, that's that place sort of in between Geek Squad and the guy I know, where yes, they have expertise. Yeah, there's a place, you know, somewhere in the corner around town, and we've heard of it, just like Jiffy Lube or Pep Boys or whatever. We've heard of it,
right?
And it's solved, and it sort of fills that middle market there.
Very interesting. Yeah, I like that, because a lot of times I will tell business owners that you don't always have maybe what you need to run the business. So it would be okay for you as a technician to hire, let's say, a manager to actually manage the business side of the business, because they don't do it very well. And if you do, it still takes a lot of time and effort. Like we talked about before, you've got good people that do certain things well, and that's kind of where they should probably be kept in the system in order to make it work right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something that, that I was recommended. I went through this program called, it's a Goldman Sachs, 10,000 Small Businesses. It's like an accelerator program. And one of the things that came up a few times is a book called The E-Myth. And it's not E like electronic. It's E as in the entrepreneur's myth.
Right.
And sort of a free plug here. And you may have heard of it, but for the listeners, it is sort of, it's spot on. So when you look at the whole idea of, you know, someone that's really good at what they do, plumber, electrician, computer repairer, whatever it is, and one day they say, you know what, I'm going to do this on my own. I've worked for someone else for long enough. I want to run a business doing what I do because I'm great at it. It's all the other stuff you didn't expect, the right. QuickBooks and the corporate filing and all the other stuff that goes into running a business that you wanted nothing to do with.
Right.
Like, what? I'm a computer repair guy. I'm awesome at it. Why am I dealing with the Secretary of State calling me about my ST1 being filed late?
Right.
What? Yeah, so that's one thing that I would suggest, you know, for the readership, for the listenership, perhaps pick up the E-Myth. It explains a lot of this sort of struggle that we have mentally. You know, I have, and I'm sure, you know, you've had at some point where, you know, you're great, you know what you're doing, you like what you do, but why are you dealing with all this other stuff?
Right.
And that's what it is.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the show before. The E-Myth is a great book. Now, a lot of people have kind of said, oh, it's, I don't know. And I'm like, listen. Regardless of whether you believe it or not, you really have to kind of take it in and go, you are good at what you're good at. And maybe you're not good at some of the things that you maybe think you're good at, and just come to your own realization that, hey, I need to separate some of this stuff in order for this to work better for me. And that's the reality. Or look at it from this standpoint. You know, I can't remember the lady's name in there, but basically she loved to bake pies, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And so that was in, again, a lot of people, they love to be in the kitchen, but then it was all the other stuff that was going on, and the employees and the, you know, this and that and the other. And it's like, they just, well, all they wanted to do was bake pies that people enjoyed. Yep. And that exactly. was, and that's what they really needed to do. And then separate all the rest of that stuff out to people that could take care of that.
So. Yeah. And you know, for anyone that I think questions that, you know, it's fair to say, well, that's sort of hokey. But what I would ask, and here's the reality, is okay, so let's say they're happy and they make $50,000 a year. Why aren't they making 500? Or let's say they make 500 a year. Why aren't they making 5 million? Look right. at it. There's self-limiting things that we all do. And so for someone to say, well, that's hokey, I'm great, you know, I run my own business, I'm fine. Okay, well, why aren't you making 10x? Clearly there's something you're not, like, you know, you're not able to do. And you know, I understand people will say, well, it's not about the money, and I, you know,
really?
Business is about money. Yeah, business is about money. So if you make $100,000 a year and you're happy with it, good for you. But why aren't you making $1 million a year? Right. So if you can't answer those questions, if you think, oh, well, a million is just too much, who does that? There's plenty of people that do that. In fact, as part of my, you know, my own growing, it's great. I get this harsh reality from mentors, and you know, I keep continuing to grow our business. They say, hey, look, until you have $1 million a year per unit revenue, it's not even a real business. And that sort of helps ground it and bring it all back and say, all right, you know what? Let's take a breather. Let's take a deep breath. And how are we going to fix this? So being happy where you are is okay. But that, you know, you cannot dismiss the fact that there's reality to business and how you build a business. So you look at where you are and you look and say, why am I not at 10x? Answer those questions. And if you can be honest with yourself and say, these are my faults, this is why I'm not there, then things like E-Myth, I think, automatically become very real to you, and you realize, you know what, it is me. I am the only one limiting myself.
Yeah, and a lot of business owners, I think, it's funny because you go, oh, I'm happy with this, but the reality is, I hear so much complaining out in the industry that It's like, no, you're not happy. And the other part too is, and here's the thing with the people don't understand. There is a difference between gross revenue and what you actually take home into your household. And quite honestly, I know a lot of business owners. I know people with storefronts. I know people without storefronts. I know people who run out of their house. And I'm just going to tell you that the average of what a person brings home into their household, in a lot of cases, is not really all that great. And they're working a million. And here's the reason why. It's not that the amount of money, but when you're working 80 plus hours a week and you're only bringing home enough to just survive, eventually that's going to wear on you where you're going to go, I could go get a job making twice as much and working half as hard.
Yeah, it's the opportunity cost as well, right? So, yeah, you do the hourly and you say, well, like, you know, I'm making $8 an hour or $20 an hour, you know, whatever the number is. But you realize you're right. You could have made more somewhere else, especially in all these years and all this time. If you worked 80 hours a week for a corporation somewhere else, you'd be making five times that. You'd be bringing home and not worry about health insurance and all this other stuff. Right. So there's that. And then there's the idea of, okay, well, I like being my own boss. And I like to make my own hours. And the reality is, as you said, your hours are actually all hours. So you're not making your own hours. You're working all hours. And I know how that is. I have long hours, many, many long hours, a lot of times. But that's maybe the labor of love where I say, I justify it by saying, I love doing this and I'm going to keep growing, but I would be lying if I said it wasn't about the money. At the end of the day, could I have made a ton of money somewhere else? Maybe. But the fact is, where I see this and will force this to end up getting to, there's no job that I could have paid me that much. So it's up to me to utilize what we have and our staff and make sure we all succeed, while we all make a living wage. So, this is different in different parts of the country, but, I'll tell you, for example, like I consider like $30,000 a year, like a living wage. I do the math where we live. And so I look at it as, we're hiring employees. We expect them to come to work, be able to survive, pay their bills, all this stuff. So that's sort of like a minimum, and we'll do that. And then make sure that we, as we continue to grow, we have to give opportunities. And this is a part that I also struggle with as we go, is how to make sure that we're providing opportunities to everyone that as they do well and they contribute to the company to grow and continue to not only grow the company, but themselves so that they have opportunities to buy homes and do all of the things they want to do, pay off their debt and all of these things. So it's a great thing, this business, and we all love it for our own reasons, but it's a great thing that we have this really vehicle is really all a business is to do the things we want to do and make money. And it's a fun ride.
And I like what you said about a living wage. And I think a lot of times that's where a lot of businesses, in my opinion, fail because they try to undercut and they're all about the bottom line and they're not going to pay. A lot of times they're not going to pay technicians a decent wage. So a lot of times those technicians go, well, and they don't understand that there's a lot of overhead and different things like that.
Sure.
So, but to them, they go, well, wait a minute, I can make twice this if I do it on my own, even with a little bit of overhead. So why wouldn't I? And so if you're making it where you're giving incentives and taking care of them, then they're going to stick with you and they're going to help you grow the business kind of as a group effort versus just you trying to grow it and then going through this turnover, which I hear happens all the time.
It does. It does. And they should all have a stake in it. I believe from the beginning that that we should all succeed together. And that doesn't mean that we all make the same amount of money or that we all do the same tasks. Right. It just means that, look, end of the day, I could not do what we do alone. He or, whoever, whichever employee, he or she could not do what we do here on their own. Like, none of us could. So we're all here together. We have to work together, really, if we're going to keep this, ship afloat and really the business growing. So we look at it that way. And so we utilize each other as we need to. And it's my job, really, at the end of the day, to provide the opportunity for them to use themselves to grow. So to learn is one thing, but also to continue to make more money, because that's why we all either work or do business at the end of the day. And we should, right? We should continue to be financially rewarded for what we do. And I think you have to look at it that way.
Absolutely. Yes, I cannot, I cannot eat computer parts, so I actually have to have money that I can go to the grocery store and buy groceries to feed myself and my family.
And so, yeah, as long as your eyes on the ball, there, I think we all have enough business out there to utilize. And I've done a lot of study. I don't just say that because I have a couple of stores. I say that because the franchise is where I've devoted everything, because I see these markets and I know there are good people that are, you know, that are going to be listening right now, and they are good at what they do. And if they just had some of the opportunities, maybe to get in front of the right customers, or maybe to be able to grow their current business, whether it's mobile or retail, whatever it is, it's all out there. So I think we can all work together as an industry, you know, as a group of computer repair people, even to continue to utilize those things and work together to change the options that people have. It's not just manufacturer or Geek Squad or some random guy. I mean, there is more that we can do, even if we are. Even if we are going to work independently, I think we can utilize each other to do best practices and things like that. So I've been making it a point over the last maybe couple years or so to branch out, whether it's through the associations, like, you know, the computer repair business owners, or whether it's through local tech networking and things like that. We all, I think there's a lot of benefit to all of us continuing to work together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What do they say? A rising tide raises all ships, right?
Absolutely.
And it's a true statement. And a lot of times, a lot of people, I think they feel they're out there alone. And I like your concept of basically taking something that's a proven system, and somebody can come in, even if they are a technician, or like you said, from the other side, a business owner, and basically go into and have that where you've already put the things in place that you know works, and you're going to be able to replicate that time and time again. And that takes a learning curve out of that. And it kind of goes back to a lot of people when I first started podcasting, you know, I had been on a couple podcasts and everything. And then I decided to take some of these shows that had been around and kind of go with them. And I had to take the first full month, and it was well over 100 hours of searching online, watching videos, figuring out how to hook everything up, how to put it all together. That was a lot of time spent in a short period of time in order to even just get started. And a lot of times people will go, hey, I've got a screwdriver and I got a little tool bag. We can throw some others. We throw some hard drives and different things in there. Let's go. And while that's true, and that's how every one of us probably started off, myself included, I think a lot of times, you've got to be able to, if you already have systems in place, it makes a lot more sense where you go, okay, somebody else is thinking about that, and I can think about the aspect of fixing things or whatever it is, whatever my strong suit is. So I like the idea.
Oh, for sure. And you know, some of the things are fundamental. So for example, our marketing pieces, it's it's funny. You know, I can say that I'm a painter. Right. And I'm terrible at painting. But the thing is, it's actually very similar to computer repair. The barrier to entry is so low because it's not like a doctor where you need to be where you have to pass an exam or be board certified. There's no threshold. Right. There's no legal barrier that says, oh, well, this person is a computer repair person. No. So because of that, I think we have a tendency to go and we set up a business overnight. And one of the things that we set up is our own marketing, right? Whether it's flyers, coupons, whatever, all these things. And so I learned in the hard way, in a very painful way, as we changed our company name and did the federal registration of our trademark and everything, that there's a lot of effort that goes into a brand and brand positioning and all these things that, you know, we're not Coca-Cola size, but they also started somewhere. And I'm feeling a lot of those pains as we come up that curve of, wow, we're like establishing a real brand. And the marketing collateral that goes behind that, for example, is just one piece of it. But having things like that to offer to franchisees that come sort of right out of the gate and say, look, we have a nice pamphlet that shows what our services are, or we have a nice ad slick that you can use in a half-page newspaper spread, and things like that that we've already tested. We know they activate people. We know it works. Advertising, like Google AdWords campaigns, things like that will get people in your door. We've figured that out because, you know, I will be the first to admit I have made more mistakes in business getting to this point than probably everyone on your show combined. I just, you know, because I don't know the right answers. So what I've done is I tried everything. I mean, you literally name it, like from TV, like Comcast cable ads to WGN radio to in the theater to door hangers, dry cleaner hanger things, like you name it. If it's marketing, I've probably tried it for our business. And at the end of the day, there's a few things that work and there's a lot of things that don't.
Right.
But it's expensive to find out what that is in our industry because in my opinion, you have to try it. And so I've tried it. And so being able to deliver some of those things and the best practices to people that we'll partner with as franchisees, I think is huge. Because at the end of the day, that is what will make us a stronger system, but also give the people coming in the door the ammunition to not fail. Because every small business, you know, us, you, everyone, in the beginning is they're running lean. They're, you know, probably, you know, half the year close to going out of business just because you run lean, right? Like you have
sure.
to, you have to calculate your risks, buy certain things. Like when I buy inventory, you know, sometimes I know like I'm barely paying all of our bills at the end of that month because I just loaded up on like 3 months of like MacBook Pros because I think we're going to move them because the season is coming and all that stuff. But geez, if we don't move them, I'm going to have some issues because I still have to hit payroll. And I still have to do other stuff. And so every business goes through those things. But I think we've figured out a formula. And I know we have actually, because now it's been 7 years, where we're ready to sort of put this out there and say, listen, if you're a great computer repair person and you have business sense, we're going to help you explode. Or if you're a business person, then you know someone that knows what they're doing with technology and are willing to hire and manage, then we have something here. And so it's such a fun adventure. You know, I'm sorry to ramble on it, but I get excited about that.
No, it's awesome. And not a lot of people are doing that. So I applaud you for putting things in place that they can actually help other people grow from a standpoint of standardizing some things. Again, a McDonald's on every corner, they're doing pretty well, right?
Yeah. And there's so many people that have the need, right? I mean, it's not just a glass palace to build a glass palace. It's the need is there. And so many people like your listenership have the talent, just matching it up and giving people that trustworthy sort of default option, like the same way that people go to Geek Squad, just literally because it exists. It's the only place they know or heard of or even know that does stuff like this. If there was an alternative, it would automatically get business just because it's the only alternative out there. And that's not, you know, that's not the only way a business can grow or survive. But I will tell you, after looking at many business models and studying a lot of business, it is a great thing to be one of the only options in the market. That is fundamental business. And that's the timing of where we're at.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about as we kind of end off the show?
No, nothing in particular. I think I love the industry and I am looking forward to, you know, hearing more of your podcast. So no, thank you for the opportunity and good luck with all of this. I'll be listening and watching on.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming out on the show. And where could people find you and find out more about these franchise opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. The main website is techvoo.com, which is TECHVOO. And then we have a specific franchising website, which is just techvoofranchise.com. And I'm always available. So, you know, generally when you call into the stores, you'll get staff. But for anyone that has any questions, no strings attached type of thing, you know, I'm always so happy to talk to people about their businesses. And if there's anything I could help with or advice, you know, lately that's been happening more and more, you know, I don't know how, but over the last year, I've been getting calls from people that are in interesting situations, trying to think about expanding, selling their business, you know, whatever it may be. I am always happy to talk about it. I'm a business guy at heart, and my passion is technology. So when the two intersect, you know, that's where I love to be.
Awesome. Well, again, appreciate you coming out and looking forward to hearing more.
Absolutely. Thank you.
No problem. All right. You guys can find me on the Google+ at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you'd like to be a guest, then send an email to guest@podnuts.com. I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. Just puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.